You are listening to Black Girl Missing, a podcast that covers stories of Black girls who were reported missing when they were under the age of 18. When Black girls go missing, their cases are severely underreported in mainstream media. We want to shift the narrative. We invite you to listen, learn, and do whatever you can to help us bring as many girls home as possible. You can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Please remember to subscribe and leave a review on your favorite platform so that we can keep bringing you the stories of Black girls that need to be told. Due to the sensitive and sometimes graphic nature of these cases, we advise you to use caution when listening.
Welcome, welcome. We are back again. We are so happy to do another episode of Black Girl Missing. I am Feminisa Jones.
I'm Nikki.
And I'm Asa.
And how are my lovely co-hosts doing this week?
Child, it's hot outside.
Yes, and I can't have my AC on while we record.
So. Oh, yes. We're sweating.
Yeah.
Working up a black sweat. But this is what we do for our girls. So why don't we get into it?
Yes.
All right.
We open each show reviewing cases of girls who are currently missing that we call the Aisha Alert. We encourage you to pay close attention, check our social media, and help us help the families who are still seeking answers and long for their loved one's safe return. We'd like to note that we create these lists of currently missing Black girls in real time, so by the time the podcast episodes are released, there may have been some changes. We will have information on each case posted on our social media channel so you can stay updated. First, we have Jewel Price. She's 16 years old from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Jewel was last seen on January 11th, 2020. Authorities say Jewel may have traveled to Harrisburg, Philadelphia, or New Jersey. She is approximately 5'3" and weighs 110 pounds. She has black hair and brown eyes. Anyone with information is asked to call the BPD tip line at 610-691-6660. Next, we have Angel Rockefeller. She is 16 from Northeast DC. Angel Rockefeller was last seen on Thursday, June 4th, in the 1600 block of Lyman Place Northeast. She is known to be a chronic runaway. Angel is described as black with a light complexion. She is approximately 5'5" and weighs 110 pounds with brown eyes and black hair. Investigators do not have a description of her clothing. She sometimes can be wearing very colorful hair. It's in braids or wigs. Metropolitan Police are asking anyone with information on Rockefeller's location to call 202-727-9099 or text 50411. Zaria Thomas is a 14-year-old girl from Palmdale, California. Zaria was last seen at noon on Tuesday from the 36,000 block of Snapdragon Court. She is described as black, 5'3" tall, and weighing 130 pounds. She has black hair and brown eyes with a scar under her left cheekbone. If she is located, call the Palmdale Sheriff's Station at 661-272-2400.
Thank you so much, Nikki. This week, we just have a case that is just so bizarre. It just rattled my brain. And when I say that I pored over the internet trying to find anything about this case, I spent hours. And you know, we really, really, really try to do the best that we can. We're not perfect, right? We're all human beings, but we really do try to do the best that we can when it comes to researching these stories. And so this is why it vexes me so much. So we're going to talk about Kimberly Nicole Arrington. And she was born May 23rd, 1982. On October 30th of 1998, 16-year-old Kimberly Nicole Arrington left her Montgomery, Alabama home at about 4 or 5 p.m. to go to a nearby CVS and was never seen again. At the time of her disappearance, Kimberly was between about 5'2 and 5'4 and she weighed approximately 110 pounds. That day, she was wearing a gray Bugle Boy shirt with a collar, light blue jeans, and white Reebok sneakers with a gray trim. She was also wearing an emerald ring with two diamonds or diamond-like stones. Notably, she had a scar on her stomach, a surgical scar, in her left abdomen. She was also known to have severe allergies, and she would keep close to home during hay fever seasons to avoid allergy flare-ups. If Kimberly is alive, she is 38 years old today. So let's go back to that day. Earlier in the morning, she started her Friday like any other day. She was up early enough to speak with her dad, Walter, briefly before he went to work. And we assume she went to school, and when she came home later, she probably did her homework. And her mom was home when she decided to go to the store because her mother recalls telling her that she was headed to CVS. So when she walked to CVS, her goal that day, she just wanted some candy and something to drink, maybe a soda. She even asked her younger sister, Jennifer, who was 14 at the time, to go with her. But Jennifer declined. She didn't want to be bothered. Her father, Walter, describes her as having been a good girl who just loved music and loved learning computers. He said that she did well in school and was always known to be well-behaved. And at the time of her disappearance, she was a 10th grader at Jefferson Davis High School in 1998. Walter says that morning they were making plans for Christmas so that she could go shopping and get gifts for the family because that's the kind of person that she was. So after she was just going to CVS, but she didn't immediately return home, her parents figured they'd look for themselves. The CVS was not that far from home, so they decided to go look for her. And they didn't immediately report her missing for at least a couple of hours because they knew where she was headed and they tried to find her. They went to the CVS and checked with the staff to see if anyone had seen her. Now this is where the story goes completely awry. All the reports vary, even to this day. Some reports say she never even made it in the store. Some sources say she did make it in the store. And this was the most difficult part of my research because it wasn't just one source that said either side. I read a few reports from CNN and other places that all had conflicting details about whether or not she made it into the store. For those that report she did, they said she did make it to CVS, but staff wasn't sure where she headed after that. They say she didn't look like she was in any trouble or under duress. She was just coming to get what she got. The most consistent report, though, is that Kimberly was last seen in the parking lot of the CVS pharmacy, which was on the corner of 3rd Street and Forest Avenue. Now, you all can look in there. I have a picture of the parking lot. You can see that it's pretty open and spacious. It's not like a CVS that's in an apartment building or like a big building. This is Montgomery, Alabama. It's kind of in a rural neighborhood a little bit.
Yeah.
It's large. It's spacious, right? Mm-hmm. You could see it. Unfortunately, yeah, there's no surveillance footage because they didn't have any cameras. Deep sigh. Like, no cameras. And the thing is, this was 1998. It's not like you couldn't have technology.
Right.
They just didn't have it in this particular area. Okay? Generally, though, there is no conclusive evidence that she made it to the CVS or she didn't. I make note of this because this is one of the issues that we run into with stories like these. People can't remember things or they misremember things and no one is 100% sure if their information can be trusted. I might have seen her. I might not have seen her. It's so difficult for these kinds of cases. And then without surveillance footage, we're really stuck. So at the time, Montgomery Police Captain Keith Barnett was questioned about why she was deemed a runaway when there's no evidence or indication that she would have run away. And we talk about this all the time. There was no family discord. She was not at all involved with any kind of older man or anything like that. She was never known to be rebellious. I mean, everybody talked about how good she was. For all intents and purposes, she was a very happy girl. The Captain Barnett pointed to the family's delay in reporting Kimberly missing as a defense because people said that labeling her a runaway caused vital time and clues to be lost. However, there is no real indication that how she was labeled would have changed or improved the investigation at all. Also, why would she ask her sister to come run to the store with her if she planned on running away? She didn't take any extra clothes, no bag, right. You know, so she didn't sound like somebody who was running away. Okay? So, you know, during their investigation, there was known sex offenders in the area. They questioned all of them. They looked into every rumor, every speculation, because this one had heard this one from this cousin and that somebody's second cousin baby mama had heard something and somebody may have seen something. They never found a suspect. And this case is so peculiar because there were no leads, no evidence, nothing at all. None of her items were found, not even a barrette. Nothing was found anywhere near the CVS, near the home, the route she usually walked from home to the CVS, nothing at all. Later in 2010, there was a Lieutenant Ricky Finney, and he was then put in charge of the case. And people have been reporting this case over the years. You're talking 1998, this is a long time ago. It doesn't feel that young. Oh my gosh, I feel like old right now because I'm like, wait, 1998 was so long ago. And I remember when it used to just be a couple of years ago. Okay. It really was. It was 22 years ago. Oh my gosh. Anyway, we're back. This case has changed hands. And over time, like when you read the different reports, you'll see, if anybody wants to look further into this, you'll see different dates. Over time, people have just been so fascinated with this case because what is going on? This Lieutenant Ricky Finney said, all we thought was we had possibly a girl that left home for a few hours to be with friends or a boyfriend or whatever and was coming back home. And so he's kind of explaining the approach, you know, why they were a bit lackadaisical, you know, the first few hours because she was 16, you know, they hang out or whatever. There's been a lot of suspicion about what could have happened. Her sister Jennifer, who is, you know, now 36, she says that she suspects her sister may have been picked up by a human trafficker or something else, and that she could be living somewhere else now. Her father, Walter, thinks that because she was so sweet and helpful to everyone, that maybe somebody solicited help from her and grabbed her, right? Like somebody might have leaned out the car and said, hey, do you know how to get to the CVS or something? And she was like, well, yeah, I'm headed that way. You know, I can show you. And they may have been like, why don't you get in the car? You know, something like that.
Right.
They have no real idea, but they do believe that someone took her. Some people questioned at the time also suggested that maybe she got a ride from someone, because here's the thing, it was a small enough neighborhood that people knew each other. So, you know, part of that is like kind of why there was so much confusion around, did we see her? Did we not see her? Because it's such a small town, people can't really remember. Well, did I see her today? You know, I think I saw her at school. Maybe I saw her at the bus, or maybe I, you know, it's such a small town. But if that was the case, right, and she just got a ride from somebody, wouldn't somebody remember seeing her and get into a car or giving her a ride or something? You know? What?
Okay, wait a minute. You know what this is making me think about? Remember Adiel Castro in Cleveland?
Oh.
He kidnapped his daughter's friends and kept them for years. Now, granted, none of them are Black, so we're not going to be covering those cases, obviously, but these were his daughter's classmates.
Because they knew
him. And they got into his truck willingly because he's a neighbor. Oh, that's my homegirl Gina's dad. Yeah. He's gonna drive me home.
Yeah.
So it makes, and he was, they were sitting in the same house for all of this time. So it made me think about, what if she's just down the street from her family? God. And can't get,
because there are some people that have done, like, there's been a number of those kinds of cases where people have been right next door.
Wow.
Oh my God. Yes.
JC Dugar.
Yes.
18 years.
Oh my God.
Wow. 18 years.
Oh gosh. And there's some other ones that I think of, you know, that were adults or whatever that did. Oh my gosh. But yeah, so here's the thing. Like, when you guys saw the CVS, you think of how the roads are. The thing is, like, even if with her walking, it's very possible that she was walking and nobody noticed, because at that time of day, it was, like they said, it was between 4 and 5. People are getting off from work. People are heading home from school. They're not really thinking about that, right? So, you know, nobody seeing her, like, it was just so mind-boggling, right? So it and this is the thing. Her case was everywhere, though. Mm. Nancy Grace, Oprah, they done all talked about her. But mostly from the bizarre aspect, and this is what I wanted to talk about. What the hell happened? Like, there is nothing here. Completely, like, alien vanished. And it's just, it's so unsettling to me. I like when we have different leads and different ideas. And, oh, you know, like, the last one they found something down 2 miles down the road. Or she left a little note or something. Or we knew that she was talking to somebody or something. Right. Here is a situation where there's absolutely nothing. It got so bad that they were in contact with psychics, right? And a lot of parents of missing children get in contact with psychics and medium because they've exhausted every option. And that's how desperate people get. And unfortunately, there are some scamming folks out there who take advantage of vulnerable parents, right? And I'm thinking about, you know, well, the other thing that was important to note is that her mom passed away in 2005. She was sick. And so she passed away never knowing what happened to her child. And so it's basically been her sister Jennifer and her dad Walter that have really tried to keep her memory, you know, alive and keep it out there. And they're still hopeful that she comes back. And so one of the things that came out of this, you know, her sister Jennifer had a daughter that she named Kimberly after her missing sister. And she tells her all about her aunt and they speak of her in the present, like as though she's still out there. And then the Arrington family was one of a handful that participated in Alabama's inaugural Missing Persons Day in 2015, which was coordinated by the Alabama Attorney General General's Office. And the Montgomery County District Attorney's Office, as well as National Missing and Unidentified Persons System. And so this is something we saw in another case before, like these cities now and these counties are finally starting to like designate awareness days, you know, for missing persons, missing children, you know, they have cold case days, like to make sure that these people are never forgotten. Because what if they turn on the TV one day and they see a family member asking for them and it gets triggered? Something in their memory gets triggered. That's my dad. Or I know that person somehow. Right? Because the other thing that we know also about human trafficking is that a lot of people that are taken, they are pumped up with drugs, mind-altering drugs, and kept on them for years. Remember that case that we looked at where the mother was like, I think my daughter's still alive, but maybe she has amnesia because maybe something happened, you know, something happened. These kinds of things, there's so many possibilities that could be happen that these girls are not dead. They're probably alive and adults, but we just don't know. And then when we talk about how many missing Black girls and women, this is why we talk about the women too, because these girls are growing up to women. Like, you know, Kimberly is about 38 years old right now. You know, between 64,000 and 75,000 missing Black girls and women right now in the United States, people totally unaccounted for. No evidence. Nobody knows where they are. They're not anywhere in the system. They're not being pinged in the system. Social Security cards not being used. Bank cards not being used. Nothing. And I remember doing a talk or something, and I was just like, I did the calculation that like 64,000 equals 0.03% of the Black female population in this country. Can you imagine what would happen if 0.03% of white girls and women were missing? The country would shut down. 0.03% of a population?
Yep.
That's a lot.
And I also want to point out, some people think, oh, if you've been missing for X amount of time, you must be dead. You don't have tens of thousands of people.
They're all just dead.
Missing, and you're not finding any bodies. You're not finding. Because the thing about a deceased body
is it
leaves behind so much matter.
Yeah.
Whether it is blood or a scent or whatever. Like, you leave behind a lot of clues that there is a deceased body there. there isn't enough places for you to hide all of them bodies.
Yes.
And people are generally stupid criminals. Nobody is smart enough to put all of these bodies in a place where they would never, ever be found. I don't want people to ever lose sight of that. These people are walking around among us. And whether they have drug-induced amnesia, they have trauma-induced amnesia. And no, it's not like in the movies where it's like, oh, I don't know myself. I don't know how to eat food anymore. It's not like that. It's if you have experienced an event that causes you to experience trauma, there are bits and pieces that you may not know.
Right.
There are bits and pieces you completely forget.
Yeah.
Your memory, your brain is meant to protect you.
Mm-hmm.
And it will take those bits and pieces. It might take that day from you. There's times where, like me, for example, I'm very open with people about having PTSD. There are times where my PTSD is triggered and I will completely lose an entire day. Like, it'll be like, oh, well, I don't remember what I did at all on Wednesday. I don't know what I ate. I don't know. Did we talk about that? Yeah, we talked about that. I don't remember. I'm so sorry. I have no recollection of that whatsoever. It's real. It's a real thing that happens. And I don't think people understand that when you are young and you are still, your brain is still developing, your frontal lobe is not developed all the way.
How young
it leaves you more susceptible to situations like that.
You have to factor in that maybe they don't know that they were taken.
Yes, that's it. You know, that's really a difficulty. Right. And, you know, I just really sat with this one because, you know, I don't understand. And so the final thing that I just wanted to say about this is that, you know, when I've read through, you know, a lot of people have talked about, you know, Kimberly Nicole Arrington, because, oh my goodness, this case does not make any sense in the world. They're saying, you know, this is Montgomery, Alabama, this particular area, this particular police department, very prejudiced. Mm-hmm. Racist tendencies, you know, very discriminatory towards Black people. We know that Black girls that are teens are more likely to be pegged as runaways than anybody else. And the precious time that we lose by just because they just dismiss it as a runaway, especially in a town like this, where, you know, I mean, she went to a high school named after a Confederate leader. Like, come on. Like, let's be honest about this situation. And so whether or not she got the attention that she deserved, we don't know. But we suspect, because we've been doing this for a long time. Okay. Like, we know how this goes. But if you do have any information at all, and if you are even around her age, and that's the other thing I want people to start thinking, like, if you're like 36 to 40 and you went to this high school, Jefferson Davis High School, and you're from this area and you even remember Kimberly and you remember what she was like and things that she was, I mean, any details that you have, you know, anything that you could possibly remember, you know. Think about people that are around your age now, if you're still in the area, or, you know, just look anywhere. Like, this is an episode where I really just want us to think, look anywhere. And next time you go to Target, like, we'll have these pictures posted up and you can just kind of look at the age progression and what she might look like now. Just anything. You can contact the Montgomery Police Department, 334-241-2790. She might have amnesia, as Nikki says. It could be a result of trauma. You know, it's just really something. So, you know, this case is just so mind-boggling. Oh my goodness! But, you know, I just wanted to bring it to light and do our part, and just kind of thinking about, you know, why so many of our girls go missing. We don't have; they just vanish, and I don't believe in anything. It's just vanish. I don't believe in it. So that's just impossible to me. All right. So thank you all for tuning in for another episode. We hope you come back next time.
Bye.
And take care.
Black Girl Missing podcast is researched, written, and produced by three concerned Black women who want justice for missing Black girls. Today's episode was written and produced by Feminista Jones, and the Black Girl Missing theme was produced by Siraj Khalif. Be sure to follow us on social media. On Twitter, we are at Black Girl Missing, BLK Girl Missing. On Facebook, we are at Black Girl Missing Pod. On Instagram, we are at Black Girl Missing Podcast. Visit our website for more information about each case, blackgirlmissingpod.com. You can support Black Girl Missing by subscribing to our Patreon, where you will receive exclusive behind-the-scenes content and bonus episodes. Go to patreon.com/blackgirlmissingpodcast and subscribe today. This week, we have a bonus Aisha Alert section.
Shania Mae Hewitt is a 14-year-old girl from Bell Vernon, Pennsylvania. Shania was last seen going into the woods from Hunter's Ridge around 8:30 Thursday evening, August 27th. Police say Shania and her mother just moved to the area and she does not know her way around. She does not have any other family or friends in the area, is not enrolled in school yet, doesn't have a cell phone, and does not have any social media accounts. She's described as being 5'6" and weighing about 100 pounds, with braces, brown eyes, and she has her hair in long braids with red and black hair. She was last seen wearing a neon green shirt with 2019 printed on it and black pants. You can contact state troopers at 724-929-6262 if you have any information about her whereabouts. Amari Jones is a 16-year-old girl from Lorain, Ohio. Amari left her home in South Lorain on August 24th, and her family believes she may be somewhere in the area of East 33rd Street between Broadway and Elyria Avenues. She's described as 5'2" tall, weighs about 145 pounds, and has black hair and brown eyes. Anyone with information on Jones's whereabouts is urged to contact Detective John Doherty at 440-204-2105. Jemiah Sampson is a 13-year-old girl from Detroit, Michigan. Police say Jemiah walked out of the front door of her home without permission. Her family said they're concerned because Jemiah has mentioned that she may harm herself. She's 5'5" tall and weighs about 100 pounds. She was last seen wearing a black shirt, black pants with white stripes, and black sandals. Anyone who has seen Jemiah Sampson or knows her whereabouts is asked to contact the Detroit Police Department at 313-596-1240.